Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program 618, Veterans Day Interview with John Loftus. And once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to present John Loftus, author of, among other books, The Witness Tree, The Belarus Secret, and The Secret War Against the Jews, as well as Unholy Trinity. John, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah, I'm having a little bit of fun with this new book, The Witness Tree. I think if I could get a buck from every member of the Bush family and the Dulles family that would not want it published, I could retire a rich man.
Well, there certainly is a lot of money ranged on the other side of the aisle, so to speak. We were talking about Operation Green Quest, March 20th, 2002. One of the things that you've spoken about, John, is the fact that people like Samuel Arian, people like the SAR Network and the Safa Trust, were not people who were without powerful friends. Tell us about people like Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, and the Islamic Institute.
Yeah, it's, Samuel Arian and his buddies had their pictures taken with the President of the United States. The President didn't know where they were. Bush didn't have a clue. But he was told to do that by his chief of staff, Karl Rove. And Karl Rove's best friend is Grover Norquist. Now, Grover Norquist is the top Republican lobbyist in D.C. He's the guy that gave us such splendid debacles like, oh, Newt Gingrich, Taxpayers for America, and the NRA lobby. So he also studied the Islamic Institute. And that's where you find Al Arian and his buddy, Abdul Rahman Al-Majuri, and both men, of course, are now convicted of terrorism. So the idea was, that Samuel Arian's pitch was that they could turn out the Islamic vote for the Republican Party, particularly in Florida. And these guys were bundling checks, and they even voted. Now, Samuel Arian wasn't a citizen, but he voted. Now, how is that for a guy who is confident of his immunity from prosecution? So Bush narrowly won Florida by a tiny majority, and Al Arian claimed the credit for it.
It's not unlike the Nazi group that was brought into the Republican Party that you've written about in Secret War, among other places.
Oh, that was Bush's daddy, yeah. When he was head of the Republican National Committee, that was the deal, that if Nixon got reelected, he would bring the Nazis in from the cold and make them part of the Ethnic Outreach Committee of the Republican National Committee. And that's exactly what happened. You know, there was a friend of mine, Russ Ballant, did a major expose, like 180 different Nazis. I mean, World War II Nazis living in the U.S. from these Eastern European ethnic groups that joined the RNC.
And in a way, this is don't go along if you think there's some significant differences. But the notion of using these extremists to turn out the vote for the Republican Party. There also were statements in the media, people quoting people like Grover Norquist, saying that this would help to counterbalance the traditional Democratic vote for the Jews.
Sure, so it offset the Jewish vote in Florida.
Right.
For the first time, I mean, back we found out Richard Nixon's State Department representatives gave a briefing in Australia, and my Australian counterpart found this classified file that had been declassified. And in there, the State Department was explaining, yeah, we know where the Nazis are in America, but we keep important about it, keep quiet about it, because the Nazi vote is important to get out the ethnic vote in five key states. And, you know, but we warn people to stay away from, you know, our certain, you know, ethnic celebrations like April 10th. And that's the day the Nazi Party of Croatia was established as a government. So, but, you know, clearly they knew exactly what was going on. You know, Nixon wanted to use the Nazi vote to get out the ethnic vote and counterbalance the Jewish vote.
In talking about Samuel Arian and Side 1, you mentioned that some people suspected that the case against him might have been deliberately blown, so to speak. Do you think that might have had something to do with his powerful friends?
Oh, yeah. When you're a guy, if you have the top lobbyist in the U.S. in your corner, and, you know, the chief of staff of the White House, yeah, you've got some few connections there.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends in justice were telling me that there was always to-ing and fro-ing about, do we prosecute these guys? Do we recruit them as informants? And there were a lot of people who never wanted to bring charges against Al Arian. This case never would have come to an indictment had I not exposed the whole cover-up.
Mm-hmm. One of the points being that the people who, that this fellow who's being championed by the so-called progressive sector is having interference run for him by members of the Bush White House.
Another group that I'm shocked that the progressive sector is supporting is the Council for American Islamic Relations.
Tell us about CARE.
CARE is a paid propaganda group that the U.S. Justice Department has linked directly to the Muslim Brotherhood, the Nazi Party of Egypt. CARE holds itself out as the NAACP of Islam, but they're really more like the Ku Klux Klan of Islam. This is a group that wants to abolish democracy in America, ban women from having the right to vote, ban Christians and Jews from participation in any public life. This is a group that wants to establish Sharia law. And they've been quoted as saying that they have supported every terrorist cause in the U.S. They denied that 9/11 was done by Arabs. They said it was some secret plot of Israel to blow themselves up and, you know, craziness. But they're a propaganda group. The Muslim Brotherhood has always had superb propagandists dating back to the days when the Third Reich financed their propaganda activities.
Then this, the, by the way, CARE is not, you know, C-A-R-E. That's the United Nations group. This is spelled C-A-I-R.
Council for American Islamic Relations.
And they have really been very successful, John.
They made a mistake. They messed around with me. They had CARE agents organized a harassment campaign against sponsors of my intelligence summit. Every year I try and bring all the intelligence leaders and senior officials together once a year for a conference to meet the American people and the press and stuff like that. And so CARE tried to shut us down because we were doing all these panels on the Muslim Brotherhood. It was embarrassing the heck out of them. So they harassed our sponsors. So we're getting ready to sue them for intentional harassment of our sponsors and donors to our charity.
Well, one of the stunning things is that an organization, and you just related some of their principles, so to speak, some of what they're working toward, but they have really staked out a remarkably vigorous media position in which they are regularly accessed by reporters, presumably ignorant, who are seeing them as some sort of, exactly, the NAACP for Arabs and Muslims in the United States, and that is not accurate at all. Not at all. Basically, it's an outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, I mean, these guys aren't just neo-fascists, they are fascists. That's what their organization is. The Muslim Brotherhood is a fascist organization in every literal sense of the term.
A good supplement to what John is talking about, the book Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBeviere, one of the relatively few sources that goes into the fascist Muslim Brotherhood, and also a book available on my website, Cairo to Damascus by John Roy Carlson, published in the early 50s, has an interview with Hassan al-Banna in it, so people can supplement what John is saying. John, you talked about the intelligence summit. Are you going to be doing that again early next year?
Yeah, I think so. What we may do is charter a cruise ship out of Miami and go to Bermuda, cruise back and forth for 3 nights. So, and the public will be invited. It's going to be cost about $600. That'll be all your meals, the hotel, the bus transfers, and all the classes for the summit. But the rules are very simple. You can quote what was said, but you can never quote who said it or what agency they were from. Because we want people from the Middle East and intelligence services to be able to feel free to speak to the press and the public about what's really going on in their countries.
Johnny
said, breaking stories. One of the things we're doing is, you know, my progressive friends are going to be angry at me, but I've been going through all of Saddam Hussein's intelligence files on WMD. And I'm going to be releasing a very shocking expose that Saddam really did have WMD. I know that makes Bush and Blair look right, but a broken watch is right twice a day. But on the issue of WMD, they were right. Saddam did have them. In fact, a year before the run-up to the war, he was buying all the components he could.
One of the things that you were going to present, one of the things that was featured in the last intelligence summit, according to some of the information that you released, John, and that if you're in a position to talk about it, I would love to kick this around. Bill Warner, a private investigator with whom you work, came across some very, very interesting information about one of Samuel Arian's operations in Florida that he was conducting with elements of the Saudi government and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Can you tell us about Al-Arian's?
A little bit, but essentially, that my right after 9/11, Bill Warner came to, after my Al-Arian case, Warner came to me and said he had an idea on how we could help. I can't tell you how we did this, but it's as if we became Al-Qaeda's internet service provider. That's not what we did. But imagine that we're reading not the contents of Al-Qaeda's email, but who sent what to whom. And from that, we built an international cross-match of every terrorist organization that there is. So we turned it over to the U.S. government Northern Command in, I think, early 2003, and they read it to their computer and it lit up like a Christmas tree. So that's how the U.S. government was able to get legal search warrants against all the domestic terrorist cells. And one of the things we found out was that they were organizing an international car smuggling ring. That's one of the ways that the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda is a part of the Muslim Brotherhood, how they fund themselves. and they were stealing cars all across the U.S. and Canada, shipping them largely through Tampa, and then selling them either for cash for al-Qaeda or to be made into car bombs to kill American soldiers in Iraq. We found two cars so far where we traced the VIN numbers from cars stolen in the U.S. that have turned up as car bombs in Iraq. And Sammy Alarian owned one of the used car lots.
Wow. So Alarian's used cars. They'll give you the deal of a lifetime,
huh?
He
just owned the land. His name wasn't on it. Sammy's very cute that way.
Yeah, and again, this is an individual. I call him Sammy the Aryan, and it's really not much of a joke, basically, for all of his...
No, come on. These guys loved Hitler.
Yep.
Loved them. You know, that's why to this day, the so-called progressives in the Middle East worship the protocols of the Elders of Zion. They're the most anti-Semitic, racist people on earth, but they keep getting a pass from us on the left.
Yeah, it's quite stunning. It's really.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's all.
People just don't realize who they are, and that the Saudis pump so much money into the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE that the CARES message gets out, and the honest scholars out there, the honest voices of Islam, never get heard. Now, when we brought last February in St. Petersburg with the Intelligence Summit here, we also hosted the Secular Islamic Summit. We brought all the modern Muslim leaders. Many of them were still active Muslims, a lot of them had dropped out. But they gave us some fabulous insights as to why the Muslim world is being co-opted by these extreme sects that have been declared heresies to Islam more than 60 times. So what we're saying is not against Islam, we're against the heresies of Islam, and all the overwhelming majority of Muslims agree with us. CARE went bananas, and they tried to denounce these guys top left, because CARE doesn't control the Muslims in America. They don't speak for them. They're a tiny fringe group, like 1% or 2% of the population supports them.
And there a lot of the criticism that has come of toward CARE has actually come from elements of the American Muslim community.
Yeah, I really support those guys a lot and do my best to get them on air and give them some publicity.
But it is disturbing that the American journalistic community isn't a little more vigorous in researching who's on their Rolodex, because CARE, in the mainstream press, they are routinely accessed as sort of the voice of moderate Islam.
Senior Islam and FBI people who speak at CARE functions. And the rank and file of the FBI is horrified. Why are their bosses in bed with the Nazis, with the terrorists? And the answer is because it was government policy to do that for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And you got people like Karl Rove and Grover Norquist,
yep,
running interference for them. It doesn't get any higher than that, I know. John, anything that you feel that you would like to discourse about that we have not talked about? Is there anything that you personally want to call to the attention of the audience and that we have not touched upon?
In addition to my book, The Witness Tree, which is fiction based on fact, there's a nonfiction documentary coming out in January. It'll be presented to the Sundance Film Festival, and we hope it's one of the finalists. It's called American Secrets, and that's a documentary on the Bush family and the other fine American families that financed Hitler and went on to finance the Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda.
American Secrets, this is a documentary about the American power elite financing Hitler.
Right.
And that will be coming out at the Sundance Film Festival.
Yep, in January.
All righty.
So I've got a new radio show on LoftusReport.com, a new book, The Witness Tree, out of Canada. Remember, you have to order it from Amazon.ca, not from Amazon.com. And then a new film. So it could be an interesting year.
John, the research that you did into Sammy Alarion that resulted in the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002. I've read for the audience some information from a researcher named Rita Katz, who I believe also worked with you.
Oh, sure. She used to be one of my clients, yeah.
She mentioned that after the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, that she and other members of the Green Quest team were actually getting surveilled by elements of FBI and CIA or somebody like that.
Sure, the FBI did their best to shut Operation Green Quest down and eventually succeeded in taking it over, much to the shock of the people from Customs that had worked on this investigation. So the FBI, you get one section of the FBI fighting others. You get one faction, the Justice Department, trying to prosecute the Muslim Brotherhood, and the other faction is trying to recruit it. In January, Seymour Hersh did this wonderful expose, and I forget what it was, New York Magazine, and he said how our State Department is trying to recruit the Muslim Brotherhood again. and put them on the payroll as, you know, moderates who can help us. The idea really being that they're a proxy army, and we'll have Shiite terrorists to go fight, we'll have Sunni terrorists in the Muslim Brotherhood to go fight Shiite terrorists in the Middle East.
Yeah, actually, Seymour Hersh, it's quite something. Are you in a position to relate to us, John, that were you personally subjected to the sort of thing that Rita Katz was? Were they on
you? Oh, yeah. After I was getting ready to file my lawsuit, because of my security clearances, I had to submit the lawsuit several days in advance because it contained a lot of classified information. And the CIA said, hey, this is great, go soon. And the FBI showed up at my door the next day saying, look, there was only 22 people in the U.S. government that knew this stuff about Al Arian, and now you're 23. How did you find out? And I said, sorry, can't tell you. Attorney-client privilege. I have more than 600 clients. They pay me a buck a piece. I am the worst-paid lawyer in America, but among the better informed. So, and the FBI sort of, you know, left. But, I mean, it's not the whole FBI. It's a small, sick group of individuals. The rank and file of the FBI is trying very, very hard to move against guys like Al Arian and his buddies.
When you were working for OSI and you did the exposés on things like the Crusade for Freedom, you and your family received a fair amount of pressure at that time as well, did you not?
Sure we did, yeah. I remember the old Nazis sent us little postcards with swastikas on them saying, we will take you by surprise. I suppose those were the days when their crayons broke. But, yeah, you know, we're used to the death threats and all that nonsense. You know, we take precautions. I had my mother-in-law start the car in the morning. But she loved that. Sweet old lady, she passed away.
John, returning to something, some of what we're talking about might seem really strange to younger listeners. I mean, how can you have Arabs working with Nazis when a lot of, quote, neo-unquote Nazis actually despise Arabs?
Hitler loved the Arabs. In fact, one day, Hitler personally briefed the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem on his plans that the real purpose of this war was to wipe out all the Jews. And one of Hitler's aides said, my God, my friend, how can you reveal such a state secret to this Arab? He says, because they endorse our goals so completely.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Grand...
Hitler loved the Arabs. He said, this is in Islam, since people have to die for Allah, and their motto was, in heaven, Allah, on earth, Hitler.
Indeed, and indeed, there were entire Muslim Waffen-SS divisions recruited by the Grand Mufti.
Yeah, the Grand Mufti recruited those divisions and even showed up at Auschwitz cheering the guards on. But people remember, this is a tiny fringe group. The Muslim Brotherhood care as much as they like to say that they're all Islam. They're not. They're a tiny fringe group. They're like 1% or 2%. 85% of the world's Muslims are not even Arabs. And of the 15% who are Arabs, about 1% or 2% of them, what you would call the Islamists, the Arab extremists.
Mm-hmm. John, returning to a present context that might... before we get to that, one of the things that cropped up in as an element that was dealing with Sami Al Arian, that was dealing with the people who got arrested on March 20th of 02, and yet something else that stretches back through history to the World War II period and the things that we commemorate, among other things, on Veterans Day, the Bank al-Taqwa. Tell us about Mrs. Nada's baby boy, Yusef, and the Bank al-Taqwa.
Yusef, the Bank al-Taqwa was one of the institutes used by the Nazis for laundering money during World War II, and then it went on and became, big surprise, a money laundering outfit for the Muslim Brotherhood, and big surprise, a money laundering outfit for Al-Qaeda. You know, these things never died because they were never prosecuted after World War II. Bank al-Taqwa should have been closed down. Yusef Nada probably should have been jailed. You know, he gave aid and comfort to the Third Reich, and he's, you know, gave aid and comfort to front groups for Al-Qaeda.
And, again, the Bank al-Taqwa overlaps, intersects with the people like Sami Al Arian and the people that were busted as a result of the lawsuit.
I had my volunteers do all this research. We drew up a list of all the banks that Sami Al Arian's organization used and how their money laundering worked. I said, it's the same bank network that funded Al Arian funded Al-Qaeda. And I showed that to a lawyer named Ron Motley, and he and his staff reviewed it for several months, and then they agreed to file the famous huge lawsuit
Sure.
On behalf of victims of 9/11. I was the intelligence advisor. I did it all pro bono. I worked for free, didn't charge a dime.
Returning to a present context in which we see some of these strange, ostensibly strange bedfellows, Nazis, white supremacists, people of that kind, working with Muslims, in this case not Arabs and not Sunnis, but in Iran. We have Ahmadinejad working with people like David Duke and European neo-Nazi networks.
Yeah. I think that the neo-Nazi network is really appalling. But these are guys that support and enthusiastically support what the Arab Nazis are doing. And they've said so openly. In the neo-Nazi publications, they've said this is the new goal of white power, to ally ourselves with these people because this is the future. There's something out called the Arab Reich that talks about the history of the Muslim Brotherhood. And it admits, you know, these are the ties. They're bragging about the neo-Nazi ties with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. There's also a book, The Enemy of My Enemy, which I think is mixed. Some of it's quite good. Some of it leaves a lot to be desired. But what are your feelings about, because we're down to our last 7 or 8 minutes here, John. What are your feelings about Iran, and where do we go from here?
Oh, it's tough. I do not think that we should go to war. I have a lot of friends in the military, and my conservative friends say we have to do something. We're running out of time. Iran is not going to have an atomic bomb. And, you know, in 2015, as the CIA has been saying, it's going to be in 2009. They're making tremendous strides. My sense is the last thing you want to do is invade Iran. 75% roughly of the Iranian people want revolution. They want the mullahs overthrown.
Mm-hmm.
They want democracy back. They want to live their lives without Sharia law. What will bring that about? I think Iran is one of the few countries in the world where sanctions will work. 70% of its food stocks and goods come from the European Union. It's a one-horse economy. Oil exports account for like 80 or 90% of Iran's product. They don't have any gasoline in Iran. They have a few tiny refineries. They have to import almost half of their gasoline from countries like India. So if we had a gasoline embargo, the whole country would come to a halt in 3 weeks. Many Iranians say, look, if you're going to bomb Iran, go bomb the nuclear sites, go bomb the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps headquarters, you know, kill the mullahs, just leave the Iranian people alone. We've suffered enough. And they're right, they have.
Yep. And it is, as I put it, though, when David Duke was schmoozing with Ahmadinejad, allowing nuclear technology into the hands of a group of people who will then interface with the sorts of people who don't care about setting off a nuclear car bomb and dying for Wotan or whoever, or Allah, is a very... Dukes and nukes are a very bad combination.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, really, it's... This is China's legacy. The Russians stole the atomic bomb from America, but the Chinese are selling it. They sold it to Pakistan, North Korea, and those countries in turn have sold it on to Iran and Syria and Libya. I mean, when Libya turned over their nuclear warhead blueprints, they were written in Chinese. That was a clue, you know. And people don't realize that, you know, this is not just, oh, well, if they have the bomb, then it's morally equivalent to Israel having the bomb. It's not at all. That no regime like this should ever have any weapons of mass destruction. An atomic bomb can kill 300,000 people in one shot. That's 100 9/11s.
Yep. And, again, there they went with the sort of networking that is going on, where you have European and American so-called neo-Nazis, I don't like the term, hooking up with people like this, it doesn't take very many people to get a hold of a weapon like that to create just a cataclysm. And among the things people should think about is that international economic experts have said that another 9/11 type incident or scale incident might very well collapse what's left of the global economy.
I think that's a bit much. I think one of the reasons that, you know, that America has been hit is we've done a good job of penetrating the sleeper cells. But the other one is restraint. Al-Qaeda doesn't want to do something smaller than 9/11. They would be embarrassed by that, so they have postponed some of the plans.
John, people out there, a lot of them may be wondering what they can do. What suggestions would you make to the average person? So they're wondering, oh, my God, what can I do about this?
Well, we hope that you become a volunteer with the Intelligence Summit. And you can go to intelligencesummit.org and find out about the charity I run that does this research work. Or maybe listen to loftusreport.com. We're looking for $5 a month subscriptions, $45 for the year. We've got to support this work somehow.
Okay, LoftusReport.com, that is the website on which people can hear your radio program.
Right.
And
that's my most current one. And IntelligenceSummit.org, I'm the president of that organization.
All righty. And The Witness Tree is your new historical novel about the Bush family and the Dulles.
More truth in this novel than in most history books.
And that is that now available in the U.S. or still only in Canada?
We can order it from Canada. You have to go to Amazon.ca instead of Amazon.com.
All righty. Is that eventually going to have an American publisher?
Yeah, it helps America and the U.K. These things often start off slowly, especially when you deal, as I do, with extremely controversial topics.
All righty. And, John, one more time, the times of your radio program, East Coast.
11 to midnight, East Coast. It can be heard along the East Coast of Florida, from Miami to the Palm Beaches, all of New York City and the boroughs, western Connecticut, northern New Jersey, part of the Catskills.
All righty. Well, John, we got started a little bit late here, and I know you are an extremely busy man, so an on-air apology for the late beginning, and we're going to let you go a little bit early here, and I'm gonna do what I do best, which is to pontificate for the last few minutes of the program.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, and apologies for the late beginning,
and
keep up your magnificent work.
Thank you.
All righty. And that concludes our visit with John Loftus. But again, we got kind of a late start here. As people can hear, I'm quite sick, and I'm managing. But we got started a little bit late. I wanted to get started on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. That's when the guns fell silent in World War One. And again, for people that may be thinking, well, who cares about veterans? You should honor the veterans. You should honor the people that kept us, at least those people who kept some of these people off of our shores. And don't lose sight of the fact that some very powerful people in this country, people who were holding power decades ago, people who are holding power now, have seen to it that these same malefactors, not only the German Nazis from World War II, but the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic fascists from World War II and later, are still very much present in the United States. So do be aware of the fact that this is not something long ago and far away, and understand the legacy that has been handed down from people who made tremendous sacrifices, in some cases the ultimate sacrifice, to try to keep fascism from our shores. Sadly, others saw to it that fascism came to our shores, and I can only encourage people in the listening audience to do everything possible to reverse that trend. A great way to do that, by the way, in addition to supporting the work of John Loftus, listening to his radio shows, getting his books and reading those, on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, there's a tremendous amount of information there. There are long article-length descriptions of each For the Record show, an entire mini-library of old anti-fascist books that people can use to catch up on some of the things we're talking about. So please utilize the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com, the linked websites, WFMU's websites, and take advantage of this tremendous online resource, because that's why I do it. And I don't get paid. There is, if you'd like to support the work that I'm doing, there's a page on the Spitfire website to click on to support the work that I'm doing. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 618, Veterans Day interview with John Loftus. This has been recorded on November 11th of the year 2007. For John Loftus, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.